Hey, what's going on, y'all? Welcome to JD's Man Cave, another star-studded episode of JD's Man Cave here in Houston, Texas, on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. This happens to be one of my favorite Saturdays of the year. This is the first Saturday of the NCAA football season. We have some spectacular games that have been on today, a few upsets. I'm a big-time college football fan. I think those kids play a little harder and they're a little hungrier because they're trying to get to the NFL. And some of those NFL games where they're laid back and they don't exert their full effort. They're millionaires. It's kind of hard to tell a millionaire what he needs to be doing and how much effort he needs to be given when you've given him all the money he'll ever be able to stand. So I really admire these college kids and just love to watch the college football game. First of all, because I was a college athlete at one time, never made it to the NFL. But, hey, I got a chance to live out my glory from the age of 6 years old all the way to the age of 22. You know, so I got a chance to play some big-time college football, you know, ESPNs, the BET football. I was at Hampton University for a four-year starter and just enjoyed the entire college atmosphere. I was so happy to hear that these kids were going to be able to continue with college football this year because they were talking about, because of COVID-19, discontinuing the college football season. Even though it's somewhat abbreviated and some schools are not even participating, and others are having games with only, you know, 25% capacity in the stadium, it beats a blank. Let me tell you something. At this point in this year, with all of the foolishness that has gone on in 2020, I would have watched professional kickball right by now. I don't care what they were going to do. I was just so glad to get back to some sporting events. I was so happy to get back to it this week that I'm sitting here watching the Clemson and Wake Forest game, and seems like every station has highlighted the ACC this week. And ACC is a good conference to play in. It includes your Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, and I want to say there's some Alabama teams there too in the ACC. I'm not sure. But ACC is nothing compared to my favorite conference, which is the SEC. The SEC is the junior NFL, I call it, the farm teams for the NFL. You have all your greatest teams in the SEC, and you get some of the most highly recruited cats in the nation go play football at SEC. Schools. You got schools like LSU and, you know, just the big-time college gang, Alabama's, you know, just the, like I said, the junior NFL players. And if you can make it as a starter on one of these SEC teams, you're almost guaranteed to be a Sunday player rather than just Saturdays. So, shout outs to the SEC and shout out to the ACC for today having a great showing. There's a surprise this year in the ACC, just for those who follow college football as much as I do. North Carolina is no longer just a basketball school. They are putting up points like a pinball machine. I mean, granted, it was the first game of the season, and I don't know if the caliber of players that they played against today were up to their level. But let me tell you something. Whenever you can put 50 and half 100 on somebody in a football game, you're doing something. So shout out to North Carolina and welcome to the ACC running this year. It ought to be pretty good to see the ACC, you know, schools like Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, Florida State. Let me see what else. You got Florida State. You got like I said, Wake Forest. You have quite a few teams in the ACC that shine every year. And we look forward. Even the number one team this year is Clemson, and they're out of the ACC. They won the national championship last year, and they are looking to be a big-time contender this year. You know, with that young cat they got quarterbacking, look like sunshine off of Remember the Titans. He's out there with the long hair, don't care, slanging the ball left and right. And then he got a prolific wide receiver who I look forward to seeing in the NFL. Hopefully nothing happens to this young man and he's able to get to the NFL. And I hope he gets to the Houston Texans, because that's my home team. That's my favorite team. And I got to ride with the home squad. So I'm hoping that he gets here to the Texans and gives Deshaun Watson some much-needed help, because the Texans looked like trash the other day. I watched the game, but third quarter, I couldn't take it no more. Like Popeye used to say, I'd have stood all I could stand, and I can't stand no more. I had to let that game go, because I was like, man, look here. I know it's the first game of the season, but you can't come out here looking like trash and expect me to support you. I've been around football too long, and I know good football when I see it, and I know bad football when I see it. And the Texans are playing bad football, period. Their play calling is ridiculous. Their execution on the field is ridiculous. Their blocking is ridiculous. Their upfront defensive line and tackling and coverage is ridiculous. So with those aspects going the way that they're going, I see a subpar year on their behalf if they don't tighten up on their backstroke, as they say. So, yeah, we have to just understand that sports is an entity that powers the entire financial system in the United States in many aspects. You have these cats are billionaires that own these teams, and they make millionaires on the field. KJ, what's happening, Reverend KJ?
What's happening, baby? I see what was going wrong last weekend.
What's that?
When I was trying to get in last weekend and was having a hard time getting in. For whatever reason, the way I've been getting in up until this point, it's not allowing me in that way. I had to go a whole different routes, but I figured it out now.
Well, thank the Lord. Welcome to the broadcast, brother. It's good to see you.
I ain't say nothing.
Now say, how's your weekend been so far?
Oh, man, it's been laid back, man. I ain't really done nothing today. Yesterday, I stepped out and had a couple of drinks and got me something to eat and came on back to the house. And, man, we did yesterday, me, my mama, my daddy, and some of the other elders did one of these yesterday. Some of the elders from the church did one of these yesterday and was talking about some pretty interesting, but it was good to hear point of views from an older group that, 65 and up group, you know what I'm saying? Exactly. The ones that were back in the civil rights era and stuff.
Well, let me explain something. We, as the younger, the 40s and 50s, you know, generation, not the guys that we have here on this broadcast most of the time, but that our generation truly has lost the reverence for that era of our history. You know, those people were revered. The elders were revered in our community at one point. Nowadays, you see youngsters talking crazy to them. You'll see a cat not help them open the door. You see, you know, you just see all kind of disrespect.
Yeah, they picked the right ones to talk crazy to.
Right. So I revere older people, man, because let me tell you something. No matter what people want to say, older people have some level of wisdom. Because if nothing else, experience gives you some type of wisdom. You know, there's no way in the world a 20-year-old is going to be as wise as a 45-year-old or 45.
You can be the dumbest person in the world. You keep living long enough, you're going to learn something.
Exactly. You have to.
You learn something. You keep waking up, you're going to learn something.
Just by, if nothing else, osmosis and attrition, you're going to learn something. You know what I'm saying? Because just from experience makes you wise, you know? So I don't understand these young cats that shun and negate what these older people in our community have to develop. That's why so many of them end up in stupid situations and, could things that could have been avoided, they end up dead in the center of it. And then wonder why. Because you shun wisdom. You neglect correction. You know, and we got to get back to the point where we revere our older black community, you know, men and women. You know, because let me tell you something. Old cats are old cats for a reason, brother. They have weathered the storm and navigated through a whole lot of foolishness to get where they are today. And let me tell you something. I always want to hear how you got there, because I'm trying to get there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, brother. The wheel has been around for a long damn time. All you got to do is push spoke you can grab hold to and ride the hell out that wheel.
One of the cats on there yesterday, he was one of the younger guys. He was the pastor's son. I want to say little Ronnie probably in his early 30s. He probably be about 31, 32, right. Something like that. But part of the discussion was the conversation that black parents have to have with their young kids about, you know, what to do when they're pulled over by a police officer, by
keeping
hands in plain sight, so forth and so on. Well, Lil Ronnie asked the question, and it was actually a legitimate question, because now he's a father. You know, he got boys, you know, about to be teenagers, and, you know, actually his boys are teenagers.
Right.
But anyway, they his oldest is a teenager. So he's coming to the age where he's gonna start driving and this and that and the other.
Exactly.
And he asked a question. He said, "Well, I'm gonna ask y'all a question that my son asked me. And I honestly don't know how to answer it." He said, "Look, I had to talk when I was young about, you know, if you ever get stopped by the police, don't argue with them, don't, you know, go back and forth with them. Do what they ask you to do. Keep your hands in. You know how the speech go." He said, but his son asked him, "But daddy, I've heard of friends that got pulled over. And they did that. They did what their parents told them to do. Just look, if he want to take you to jail, put handcuffs on you, don't argue with him, don't fight him, don't resist him." He said, "I got friends that have done that. And they still got in trouble or got beat up." He said, "So, What do you mean? I mean, if I do what you tell me to do in case I'm pulled over and the cops still get on my tail or they still lock me up for some unjust reason," what do you do then? And he was really confused about it because he honestly didn't have an answer for it.
Well, my thing is this, KJ, I understand that. And like you said, that is a very legitimate question that the youngsters can't ask right now, because we have seen so many examples where black men and black women have complied with the police and they still end up injured, hurt, or dead. You know what I'm saying? So I understand exactly what he's saying. But the thing is, with the socioeconomic climate that we have going on in America with police brutality, there is really nothing you can do except comply and pray. You know what I'm saying? We have to trust God, the same God that led us out of slavery, that he will lead us out of this foolishness that we're dealing with. And the thing about it is, even though we were led out of slavery, there were a lot of slaves that were killed throughout the process. You know, some of them didn't even make it over here to dry land. They were right. Sides on the way over, on, you know, as they call it, the passage over. So there are going to be statistics. There are going to be casualties. There are going to be mishaps and accidents and killings throughout this process of trying to change the climate and the atmosphere of policing blacks. But the thing is, we simply cannot stop having the talks with our kids. You still have to have, give them.
I don't know what's going on. My phone just beeped some type of way.
Right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It was just some random beep. Right. I don't know what that meant. But one of the elders at the church told him, well, actually, his uncle, the pastor's other son.
Right.
I mean, not the Pastor E is the head, the originator of the church. He's Pastor E now. He doesn't preach anymore. His oldest son is the head pastor now. And his second oldest, his other son is the associate pastor. The associate pastor was on there. And he told him, he said, man, look, at the end of the day, and he said, your daddy isn't on here right now, but I'm pretty sure I can speak for him when I say this. At the end of the day, our main concern is that you get home. He said, right. Now, if they, you know, I'm not saying what they're doing is right. If they stop you for something like a speeding ticket or running a red light, and it go from a speeding ticket to them getting you out the car and slamming you on the ground, just for whatever reason, do everything within your power to swallow your pride and get back home. He said, because if they break the law and do something like that, he said, I'll deal with them on the back end. You know what I'm saying? He said, right. My concern is that my child gets to the house. Even if he come home bruised up with a black eye or whatever, he said, I'll address that. You know what I'm saying? What I just need you to make sure you do is to do whatever it takes within reason without being making the situation, you know, escalating the situation.
Right, exactly.
And I'll take care of them.
Right, exactly. And that's a valid point that he made. And like I said, even though we know that we are following the laws and the rules, and you have to understand that with a system such as the police, you're going to have bad apples. There are some bad cops out there, period. You know, looking for somebody to beat up, somebody to abuse, somebody to kill, somebody to do whatever they have to. And because the black man has been villainized since slavery, we are often the target. But knowing this, we have to act accordingly. We have to be a little more compliant, a little more patient, a little more understanding when it comes to law enforcement. And like you said, it should be, but as a citizen, we have to be the ones oftentimes that de-escalate the problem.
Right. And that's a sad situation.
Having to talk.
You got guys who get paid to go through training to learn how to deal with situations like that, yet they go completely against what they're taught to do. And put, like, I was watching this video the other day, yesterday, it was some white protesters.
Right.
And the cop had on a mask, but it was one of those thin blue line masks, those Blue Lives Matter masks that the police wear.
Right.
And the white boy, he's probably in his early to mid 20s. He walked by, he said, that's so disrespectful. He didn't stop. He didn't put his finger in the cop's face. He didn't, you know, get nose to nose with him. He just, as he was walking by, he was like, that is so disrespectful for you to be wearing that mask, because you know that ain't another, that's just another way to undermine the fact that y'all don't want to accept that black lives actually do matter.
Right.
But he said this as he was walking.
Right.
The cop made a comment or whatever, and the dude, you know, he, just over his shoulder, he said, but you know, that's disrespectful. Y'all can't say all lives matter until y'all accept the fact that black lives should matter just as much as all other lives matter.
And right.
The cop wound up grabbing the dude, handcuffing him, so his friends were there. And you hear so many cops say this, and it irritates me to no end. This friend that he grabbed him, started roughing him up and put the handcuffs on him. He said, yeah, he said, am I under arrest? He said, the cops said, yeah. So one of his friends that was videotaping said, what is he under arrest for? He said, because he first of all, he disrespected me. And the white girl immediately cut him off before he get going. He said, but last time I looked at a law book, that's not a crime. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
she said, if your feelings are that sensitive to where somebody can actually make a comment to you that doesn't agree with your point of view. They didn't yell at you. They didn't cuss you out, out your name. They basically disagreed with you. You consider that disrespect? She said, if you're that sensitive, then you need to take that uniform off right now, because you're the type of cop that's going to wind up putting somebody in a casket.
Exactly. And she told the truth.
And come to find out, this same cop in the past, two incidents. One incident, he got into it with some guy at a bar, ran down this guy, tackled him outside, beat him up, and shot him in the hand, only to find out this wasn't the guy that he got into it. He had the wrong guy. And he was off duty at the time, I should add. The judge said, even when they're off duty, a cop is on duty. Whether he was on duty or off duty, he beat up and shot the wrong dude. Another incident, it's still pending. He tried to get his wife to lie on his in-laws to say that the in-laws were molesting the kids so that the in-laws wouldn't be able to take the kids to the custody battle. Right. I mean, but now this dude's still wearing a uniform and a badge, and there's other things that he did too. But y'all still allowing this dude to walk the streets with a gun and a badge.
Let me explain something to you, Kay. That is something that Black Lives Matter is advocating as well, that these officers, just like that officer that killed George Floyd,
right,
he had numerous incidents prior to this situation that would have caused him to be suspended or fired. Yet he was still wearing a uniform that day. Had he not been wearing a uniform that day, George Floyd may still be alive. So the thing is, there is too much leeway and light duty given to officers who commit crimes that they really should be locked up for,
right,
or should be at least fired for, or removed from the police, you know, removed from the police force. So
hey, real quick, Jay, there's Akeisha Robinson from Facebook. She chimed in. I don't know if you can see it. She said those are the worst kind of officers.
Right. Yeah, that's Keisha from Sisters United group.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Keisha is exactly right. Keisha, you are so right. There are so many officers wearing that badge and that uniform today that have no dadgum business being police officers. They shouldn't even be security at Walmart, let alone walking around with a gun and a badge. So, we just got to get back to, setting standards a little higher for police officers and not letting them off so easily when they have misconducts.
That was one of the points that a lot of the elders mentioned on that Zoom we did yesterday. They said that the first thing that needs to be done in the Senate, in the Congress, in state government, and in local government, there needs to be some system implemented. Well, these cops are held accountable for their misdeeds. There's no way that James Daniel should get up to go run to McDonald's to get him a cheeseburger, and he run a red light, and I find out from Nikki or Queenie or somebody that James Daniel's wound up getting killed. How does the situation go from somebody getting a speed ticket? All that cop should be doing is walking up to your car, tell you what you did,
write
your ticket,
and send you on your
way about your business.
Hey man, let me tell
you, there's no recourse for them. They know they're above the law, so they don't feel any need to, to dial it back.
I tell people all the time, until there are consequences that warrant for officers that have bad behavior, until the consequences become more dire and more severe,
right,
you're gonna keep having the same type of incidents, brother. You're gonna keep having them, because I tell people all the time, this is like a bad child. A child with no consequences is a terrible thing to have in your house.
Boy, look,
he is a you know that I ain't got no consequences. I can do whatever I want to do. That's the worst child you could ever have in your house. Yeah, so it's the same way. Police force, these guys are on the police force, and like you say, they feel like they're above the law, and they know even if they do get reprimanded, it's going to be a smack on the hand. You know, they'll get desk duty and be right back to policing the community again and right back in the situation where they can do what they want to do again. We until we have dire consequences, we're going to keep having incidents that we are seeing. And these incidents have been going on forever. We just, everybody got a dadgum camera now, and they're being televised more.
Now, that's something I want to bring up, too, with what you just said, because, but first of all, firing a cop isn't a consequence. I'm going to tell you something real quick, JD. Let me have the flow, man, for just a second. Just show you how deeply saturated the relationship with mm-hmm. cops and in the black community. If I saw a video, brother, this was a couple of months ago. You probably seen it before too. It was like it was somebody's camera on their yard or something. And it was a little boy. Little boy looked like he couldn't have been no older than probably about 8 or 9. And he was just out in the driveway. You know, the daddy truck was out there. The mama car was out there. The little boy was just out there, you know, dribbling a basketball in his driveway. Wasn't bothering nobody. You know, obviously wasn't doing anything illegal. Just being a little 8-year-old, 9-year-old boy.
Right.
He saw a cop car coming up the street. You know what this little boy did?
Took out running in the house.
He went and hid behind his daddy truck.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And the, you mentioned something about cameras. There also needs to be something implemented that these officers are required to wear their body cameras and it be functioning 24/7. All this excuse about the body cam not working or not being on, that to me in and of itself should be a punishable offense when it comes to these police officers.
Right. That's all.
I can't hear you.
It's a cover up and a cop out, I think.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I mean, with the climate the way it is in America and what this young man at 8 years old and 9 years old has seen on TV, do you blame him?
No.
Exactly.
It's amazing how it's affecting our babies, man. That's crazy, yo.
Look, I'm 51 years old, KJ. I come from the officer-friendly era where the officers came to the school and elementary and, you know, did the career day type situation.
Yeah.
You know, we were taught to that officers were there to help you and to inform you and to, as they say, protect and serve. Nowadays, we see with our own eyes, even at 7 and 8 years old, that is no longer true. They're not there to protect and serve. They are there to brutalize, misuse, and kill. That's what they're there for. To that 9-year-old, that's exactly what the police represents. And that's not going to change until we change the entire climate of America. Not just the climate of America. You know, so, I mean, I understand the young man.
I had a conversation with a Hispanic guy the other day. He was like, well, man, and he wasn't... He didn't realize he wasn't intentionally being racist, but he was being racist. But because it was a respectful conversation, it didn't irritate me or frustrate me to the point to where it got heated or anything. But he was like, and man, he said, I mean, a lot of us, we stick together because we coming over here to a foreign country. And, you know, we don't really, a lot of us don't speak. When he say us, he's talking about other Hispanics.
Right.
He said, a lot of us don't speak the language, or if we do, we speak very little. The opportunities aren't the same, you know, for us as they are for people that are already here, this and that and the other. And he said, and you guys, y'all have opportunities, all kind of opportunities that y'all, I had to stop him real quick. I say, first of all, let me explain something to you. The reason you're able to come over here is because of us. The sacrifices our people made during slavery and in civil rights to adjust the laws so that you and your people could come over here and function and collectively get together without being interfered or intervened with. We paid that price for y'all, number one. Number two, when we were brought here, we didn't have the luxury of being able to stay within our community and not be bothered. We were brought here, and we were shackled up, put in slave quarters, barely fed, barely clothed, whipped, worked 7 days a week, 20 hours a day. So we didn't have the luxury that you guys have to come over here without being whipped, without being chained, without being persecuted, and collectively do what y'all need. So when you divide a community for 450 years, you're going to have a lot of issues in that community. Now, am I saying our community is broken? No, because we the strongest people on this planet. That's really why they care to keep their foot on our neck, because they know if we ever wake up and come together, well, what a beautiful sight it'll be. But with that said, we paid the price for you to be able to have the freedoms that you have. So rather than you looking at us negatively, rather than you having this disdain for Black people, to some degree, there should be some level of appreciation and respect, because the doors that you are able to walk through, Black people, we built them for you, my brother, for real. Right.
Yeah, so show some gratitude. And you know what, Kay? The thing is, you are absolutely right, and he is absolutely right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How it is. Let me explain why I say that. We all know, as Black men, we all know fellas who have squandered their opportunities as far as education and businesses and working. We got so many lazy Black men, young Black men right now, that don't want to work, don't want to do nothing. They don't want to finish school. They don't take advantage of public. As dismal as public education is, they don't even take advantage of that. Without any education in America, I don't understand what a young Black man is thinking he's going to do and what's going to happen and how he's going to miraculously become successful. First of all, let's talk about that. Second thing is, you're absolutely right as far as us paving the way. But let's just be honest. We don't stick together as a Black people. We were taught through slavery to not trust and not honor each other. We are some of the backbiteness of trying to get over. I'll stick each other, people.
But you just said it though, JD.
I'm sorry.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up like hand and eye.
Okay, I'm sorry. But like I said, we are a sick community as Black folks. And we need to address a lot of our sickness before we can move forward in the American culture. We true enough, we were set up with a disease called slavery many, many years ago. But the thing is, opportunities have popped up and been afforded to us to work our way out of the slavery mentality, yet we still end up enslaving ourselves by not going to school, not getting a quality education, not practicing a strong work ethic. Let's just be honest, man. I mean, honesty and good understanding is the best damn thing that's gonna get Black people through.
If you take that approach, okay, you blame the child for. It's like you're blaming the child. It's like the bulk of the blame is being placed at the feet of the child, and the parent is being completely disregarded. The child needs to get his stuff together too. But let's understand that child is the way it is because of what that child has been subjected to. You can't look at one issue and not address the other. You can't just address the issues in the Black community, because we've seen in the past when we've tried to get ourselves together and pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, they keep doing stuff to prevent us from doing that. So it's not that it's like solely our issue and our issue alone. Because when you see Black people trying to be prosperous, do Black people to some degree mess each other over? Yeah. But there are also legal avenues that they do to keep us down. There's so much already in place that makes it that much harder for that Black man to get to where he needs to be. And that's not the case with everybody, but every white person ain't successful either. Every Asian person ain't successful. Every Mexican person ain't successful. There's lazy bombs in every community.
There are a lot of white people who squander their opportunity, but I'm talking about my people, my black people. I'm not worried about the white folks that don't make it. That's not my point. My thing is this, though, KJ. There were people who were raised in two-parent households. There were people who were raised with a single mother, a single father. There were people who were brought up in the foster care system.
Right.
Some of the most successful people that you will ever meet, not because of the circumstances or the way that they were raised, but because of their determination and their drive and just taking advantage of the opportunities that were afforded to them. Let me explain something to you. I see so many young black men quit, give up, a little bit of adversity, and they crumble. They have no wherewithal to weather any type of storm. That's why you have so many of them hanging on the corner that don't have no daggum job, dropped out of school in 11th grade. Why would you go to school?
I don't understand that. And so now, see, that I got a problem, and that's the parents to me. Ain't no way no 16, 15, 16-year-old kid finna be living up under my roof, and you just completely quit school, and I just got to accept it. Nah, that ain't finna happen.
Well, let me explain something to you.
Everybody don't think like me and you think on that, though.
With all of these single black female households, that's happening more often than you think, brother.
Oh, I know.
It's more often than you think. And you know, the system has taught black women that they don't need a black man in the house. You know, it's a intricate system that was put in place to destroy the strong black household. So it is working. Like I said, slavery ain't still here, but it's still here.
I met this girl, man. Just show you how some of the issues between black men and black women to some degree run so deep.
Right.
I met this young lady. Wasn't even trying to meet her. Just happened to meet her not too long, a couple of weeks ago. And we never, you know, I wouldn't even necessarily say we were dating because we weren't dating. Anyway, long story short, she's 39.
Right.
She has a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old.
Okay.
Two boys.
Right.
And she's looking for a house right now. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, that's good. Good for you. You know what I'm saying? And invest your money in something that you're going to keep or whatever. Well, right. I'm like, well, shoot, you sure you want to do that? You know, your boys, they 17 and 15. For you know it, they're going to be out the house. You know what the response was?
What?
No, they not. They my boys. They can stay with me as long as they want to.
Exactly.
And I'm like, I mean, you mean just like never leave? Because I said, I know if like if they move out on their own and they, you know, fall on tough times, I know, you know, they always welcome to come back. But she like, no, they can stay. And instant to me, that was a red flag.
Right.
It was a red flag. She makes it a point in just about every conversation we have. Oh, niggas this, niggas that, niggas this, niggas that, niggas this, niggas that. And I'm like, well, sweet baby, look, you have to understand something. It's obvious you have a very profoundly negative outlook on black people in general. I'm assuming black men in particular. But right. With that said, you have to understand. You talking about your sons when you say that too, because that's how the world identify. You talking about your mother when you say that too, because that's how the world identify. I said it, but first, why do you have so much disdain? Because she knows I'm a very progressive thinking pro black individual. So she like, well, she called me and she was like she called me one day, the last time we talked, Jay. I put on that poll, I swear to God. She called me. She say, "I'm through with niggas." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, talk to me. What happened?" She said, "The house she got approved for the house.
Right.
She was originally working with this white realtor, but she decided to, you know, bring it back home and work with a black realtor." She said, "The black realtor and the house seller, they agreed to one contract." before it went to the bank, somebody contacted and let us know that they switched up the percentages on the contract. So right. they were going to actually get more money than, you know, basically they redid the contract. Didn't tell her about it. So she was like, and I'm going to go to this white realtor. That's why I can't mess with niggas. And this and when I tell you, I literally sat there and said nothing. She went out for about 45 minutes. I was about as quiet as can be. Never said a word. I didn't interject. I didn't cut her off. So she finally said, and you with all this pro-black stuff. See, that's what I say, baby, look. I told you a long time ago. That's just a subject that me and you just going to have to agree to disagree upon. You right. look at it one way. I look at it another way. You feel how you feel. I'm not. But I haven't even said anything. You sit here went on this whole tangent. And I sat here and let you vent. I didn't get a word in. I didn't try to get a word in edgewise. You just stole the show. And I played the pips to your Gladys Knight. Right. And you get mad at me now? And she just hung the phone up.
Right.
And let me text me back. She texts me back saying, KJ, look, I know you think highly of black people and you want the best for black people. She said that just right now, I don't need to be hearing that. This, I said, sweetheart, look, my response to her, I say, if that's how you feel, that's fine. But let me get something understood to you. I'm not naive enough to assume that every black man is a good person or every black woman is a good woman. But what I am saying is you have issues that are way deeper than this conversation we just had. Exactly. I hope you find what you're looking for, and I'm going to let you make it on that. Because I'm not losing. I feel like I dodged a bullet with that one. But it's just amazing how deeply rooted her hate is for black folk. I actually almost started wondering, why you even entertain a conversation with me if you hate us that much?
I was just thinking exactly what you said, KJ. Let me tell you something about slavery and the white man and Jim Crow laws. The greatest thing that was ever created was to teach black people to hate themselves internally. That is what has fueled the entire problem with the black community. We hate ourselves and we hate each other. We don't trust each other. There's a deep-rooted hate and a deep-rooted distrust in the black community, period. Until we address that and heal that hurt, we are continue to operate in the shadow of slavery throughout our history.
You're damn right, boy.
We're going to continue
that better myself.
Yeah, we're going to continue to operate in the shadow of slavery because of this. The greatest thing they ever taught us was to hate ourselves.
Well, look,
one another. So
I remember I was incarcerated, and I had an old school partner. He was like in his 60s back then. I was probably about 24, 25. Uh-huh. And we just sitting there, just like me and you doing now, just having a conversation or whatever. Old brother come over there. Look out, KJ. I say, yeah, what's up, bro? Say, man, what's the capital of, he said, what's the capital of California? I said, Sacramento. You sure? I said, yeah, Sacramento. So he started giving me that look like, nigga, you sure? I said, well, man, if you ain't gonna believe me, what you ask me for? It's Sacramento. Dude, you know when I tell you this dude went, he left me. It was three Aryan brotherhoods. They had swastikas on them. One of them had the big old white pride tattoo on his stomach. Everybody know they Klansmen or whatever. He go ask them, man, what's the capital of Sacramento? I mean, what's the capital of California? White dude look at him, told him one time, Sacramento. Okay. I'm like, so this nigga going to ask me three times? He didn't believe me.
Hey, okay.
Uncle Frosty over there asked him one time, and it's good as gold. He came to ask me something about 2 minutes. I said, say, bro, don't come talk to me no more, man.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I guess the white dude saw what was going on.
Right.
He come over there. Now, he got this big old blazing white pride tattoo across his chest and a swastika on each shoulder.
Right.
Hey, man, what's wrong, man? No, he was just asking. I say, let me excuse my French this one time, boy. I say, man, let me explain something to you. as long as your asshole point toward the ground, don't you ever stand in front of me with all that stuff in my face. I said, you got something to say to me? You put a shirt on. I said, I got ancestors that's in pine boxes 6 feet deep right now. With everything you got on your chest right now, brother. So if you want to talk to me, show me some respect and put a shirt on. Exactly. It's like that? I said, yeah, it's like that.
Exactly.
Man, you know, after me and him left nose to nose, you know where the brother that wanted to know what the capital was went?
What?
Over there to the white boy.
Yeah.
I'm like, this boy, you about the epitome of Uncle Tom, boy.
Nothing that you just told me, brother, surprised me about any of that. I see so many incidents of that myself. I was in TDC. I said, man, look here, let me tell you something. We are still trying to please master.
Boy.
We still trying to please master, and we believe everything master tell us. You know, it's so many people in the black community, especially older blacks, feel that white is right. Whatever the white boy say, oh, that's got to be gospel.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, that's real, because the white boy said it. But not understanding that blacks are, you know, we are very educated people. We research and we do our vetting of facts so often, but we get considered not knowing. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. How in the world, I don't know what I'm talking about, but the white boy tell you the same thing and you believe him off the bat, like you said.
You see that video I put up earlier this week?
Which one, brother?
Man, I know I've probably been doing the majority of the talking today, man, but I missed out last week, so I'm trying to make up for lost time.
Make up for it then, brother.
Let me tell y'all something that happened for you, JD, Queenie, and anybody else that may be listening. I just got reminded about this not too long ago, but I heard about it during the time of the actual trial. Just goes to show you how much disregard and disdain law enforcement has for black folks. We all know who Jeffrey Dahmer is.
Right.
Back in 91, when leading up, 91 or 92, when I'm leading up to Jeffrey Dahmer being caught, this girl, two black girls, they were like 17 and 18. They were cousins. Uh-huh. They were coming up the street in Wisconsin. Saw this little Asian boy. Last name was Canarac or something like that.
Right, right.
The boy was 14 years old, butt naked. Couldn't take 2 feet forward without stumbling left and right. They said that's how out of it he was. You know what I'm saying? Come to find out, the reason why he was out of it was because Jeffrey Dahmer had started getting his victims, and he would drill a hole while they're unconscious into their skull and pour acid or whatever into their skull to kill their brain so he could still keep the victim with him. But the victim is pretty much brain dead. They can't respond or refuse anything.
His own homemade lobotomy.
Basically, pretty much. And he done this to this little boy, 14-year-old boy. Now, you already know Asians are, you know, no stereotype, no racism is contended, but Asians are pretty much already baby-faced. A lot of them look younger than what they really are.
Exactly.
If he's 14, he probably look a day over 8. You know what I'm saying? But
probably a little bit in stature, too.
Skinny and everything. Coincidentally, 2 months earlier, Jeffrey Dahmer had molested this boy's older brother. This boy's older brother. But anyway, the dude managed, after he got this stuff put in his head, the dude had been beat up, bruised. They said he was bleeding out of the rectum. You know, you can see the welts and all that on him. He still somehow managed to get away from Jeffrey Dahmer. The girl said she saw him. She ran to the boy. She didn't know what was wrong with him, who he was or what. She said when she got to him, he just like fell in her arms. And she told her aunt, her cousin to go, I guess, to the store or wherever they were going. I'm going to deal with him. She holding the boy. She calls 911. The girl did. This is a true story. She called 911. While she waiting for the cops to get him, Here comes 32-year-old Jeffrey Dahmer, full-grown man.
Right.
He comes, see the boy, grab the boy, and is taking him from the girl, trying to wrap him in a blanket. The girl said her instincts kicked in. She knew something was amiss. She said, this boy looked like he was young enough to be my son, almost. And he's naked, he's bleeding, he's beat up. Something not right. The girl started fighting with Jeffrey Dahmer to get him off the boy.
Right.
Ultimately, the cops get there. When the cops get there, she said they basically took her and threw her to the side. Because in their eyes, all they see is an angry black woman.
Right.
She's wrong. Jeffrey's right. The girl said they pushed me to the side. They instantly went to go start talking to Jeffrey Dahmer. She said that Jeffrey's talking all calm. He's to the cops, but when he talks about her, she's just another angry black woman. She's in my business. This is my friend. He's just drunk. Now, the girl said, clearly you could see this was a minor and that Jeffrey Dahmer was a grown man. And the boy is bleeding. He's bruised. Any cop worth their badge would instantly be like, okay, something ain't right here. This boy needs to be taken to a hospital. That she said she wound up, she go to the cops. She tried to give us, they keep telling her to be quiet. We'll get to you in a second. They would never come talk to her. She goes into the house to let her aunt know where she at. She said when she came back out, the cops were gone. The fire department was gone. The LaBoy was gone. And Jeffrey Dahmer was gone. She goes back in the house, gets her aunt to call the police station. It just so happened the cop that answered the phone was the cop that was on the scene. He told her, hey, we took care of him. He wasn't a minor. He was over 18. The boy ultimately found the boy was 14. We checked his ID. So now they lying. We checked his ID. We realized they were just having a lover's dispute. Again, the cop is flat out lying. They couldn't have checked his ID because if you did, he'd have seen he was a minor.
Right.
2 months later, Jeffrey Dahmer got another, and he wound up killing 3 or 4 other people in between the 2 months that he got caught. 2 months later, he wound up getting caught. Cops go into his apartment. They find a barrel with the body parts. They open his refrigerator. He had one severed head that still had meat on it. And he had like 3 or 4 other severed heads that had a little fresh, but they were pretty much just bone. Guess who one of those severed heads was?
That little boy.
That 14-year-old boy.
Right.
Now, this man has managed to kill that boy that day or whenever he killed him the next day or whatever. And 3 or 4 other people. Had these cops not been so embedded in their racist point of view, that little boy would be alive today.
Right.
Those other 3 or 4 people would be alive today.
Right.
Here's another kicker. They fired the 2 cops. Both of them went and got jobs in other counties. One of them just recently retired as a police chief.
Wow.
Boy, boy, boy. If we ain't up against it, man, it's us against everybody, man.
I stopped being surprised by foolishness in 1995, bro. It's been a long time. I understand. I thank you for sharing that story, but, hey, man, that just goes to show you that, like you said, we're up against it, bro. There's nothing. I mean, it's almost hopeless. If I was a... with such a strong individual, I would probably give up hope and just give up, period. Because I am who I am and what I was made to be,
right?
And trust God more so than anything, I persevere and keep pushing on the day. Because it takes prayer and perseverance to kiss. Let me tell you something, the hardest job you're going to ever have is being a black man, brother.
there's
a harder damn job than to be a black man day to day and go outside.
Man, boy, you said something else.
There is no job you're going to ever have harder than being a black man, period. I don't care what nobody say. Well, what about, hey, not even rocket science, bro. It's harder than being a damn black man, period. Mm-hmm. So, KJ, I appreciate you coming on with me, man, and pushing the agenda today. And the dialect, it was always, as usual, informed, intellectual, and we lived up to, as we say, Black educated black men educating black men. That's all good. So again, brother, I appreciate you chiming in.
I'm good, man. Like I said, I hate I missed out last weekend.
Yeah, hey man, look, you're better late than never.
For sure. For sure.
Appreciate you this week.
All right.
But go ahead and sign off, Kay. We're gonna get out of here. We got about a few minutes left, but go ahead and sign off. I got some
Listen, man, just remember that old slogan: each one teach one. We gotta fix it internally before we can expect them to fix it externally. I'm gonna leave it on that.
Right. Amen. And the thing that I want to leave us with, KJ, is we holler. Matter, you know, and true enough, black lives do matter, but let's make them matter in our community first and show white folks that we care about each other first. Then and only then are we going to get the backing of the white community to help us push our agenda, because our agenda is never going to be pushed simply because black people marching, black people singing "We Shall Overcome" and all that. There's never had our, that has never made our movement push forward. We are going to have white people putting pressure on white people to get our agenda pushed ahead. So let's stop here and love on one another, educate one another, and be kind to one another, man.
For sure.
We will overcome if we start with the sickness that's inside our community first. So let's make black lives matter to us first. And then black lives matter to the rest of the world. So with that being said, this is JD of JD's Man Cave. And again, I appreciate you, Reverend KJ, for chiming in with me today. And we'll see y'all next time on JD's
Man Cave.
Have a good one.